Good morning, good morning. You?
Morning.
Oh,
morning,
I thought,
sir.
I thought no. No, but you can't start like that. Yeah. Take a proper space. I hope we all take a space where we can be heard. I heard us starting from a disadvantaged point of view. Good morning, everybody.
Morning, sir.
Let's open the meeting and welcome everybody. I hope that I have a bit of going through the document as we have about a week to read further, and I think that will give us space to can flow a bit and catch up with the time lost. I want to wish everybody the good time that they have. I think there are a number of parties that went to the manifestos launches and so forth, and the other one going this weekend. I think we must wish them luck in advance, those that are still going. Those that went, I'm sure we are already engaging in their input. It will help us to govern the country better. If we take into cognizance that professors are and that if you win, you will do. If you don't, you know that it won't happen. So those that will win, unfortunately, will have to do what their manifesto says. I don't know, Honorable Leon, whether if in the moonshot which manifesto will work, but we'll hear from it. Because moonshot has got quite a number of you in one. And you are launching different manifestos in the process. Welcome. Let's observe a moment of silence for meditation and of prayer. Thank you very much. The meeting is duly opened and everybody is welcomed into the meeting. Item 3, no SIPO.
There is no apology received, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. In the absence of that, let's get into the purpose of the day. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, we are on Zoom. Let's check how many are we. Because we can't, can the administration assist us, please? Morning, and how are you? So
yes.
Can we be assisted if we are making a quorum, if we can proceed? Mm.
Yes, we do have a quorum.
Yeah, just give us the numbers. I'm sure she's asking that question.
Mr. Basson, Mr. Swai, Mr. Ge, Mr. Mashiko, Mr. Mo, Mr. Maybeck, Ms. Mushlala, and Mr. Basson are on the platform. And Mr. Hendricks.
Seke and Seke not in the meeting?
Seke, yes, I'm not sure about Mr. Seke. Only Mr. Seke has not joined yet. Everybody's here.
Good. Thank you very much. I'm sure it is for correct purposes, because if we just start without knowing whether we have a quorum or not, it might be an issue.
No, no, Chairperson. It will always be for the good purpose. How can we do things for wrong purpose, really? It will always be for good purpose. We are checking. We are on Zoom. It's been long not using Zoom. And it's better when we are on Zoom. The administration assists us if we are correct, because we don't want to waste our time here. At the end of the day, we get statement that says that we are not correcting. It will always be for the good purpose. Thank you.
But that's what I'm saying, Honorable Michal. I'm saying the point is raised for a good purpose, because otherwise we can continue without having a quorum. That's what I'm saying, and I honestly agree with you that the purpose was it was for a good purpose. That's what I was saying. Okay, we are on page 15, chapter 5.
Sorry, Chair?
Yes, who's that? If we can raise our hand, I think it will be better, because if we... let me see what I can see the hands. Yes, on my gadget. Let me just... Yeah, I can see the Honorable Moore's hand is up.
Thank you, Chair. So we just had a readout of the members who are attending. I know Honorable Basson was read out twice. I'm looking at the participants in the chat, and I'm not seeing him once, let alone twice. I'm now concerned about the quorum, and I'm sorry, I wasn't concerned, but I'm actually very grateful that it was called, because I don't know where the confusion's coming in, or if one of these other names is Honorable Basson, but the quorum seems to have been put together with names of people not on the list. So can we please handle quorum a little more carefully? Because, yeah, I'm just need to raise the concern.
I see Honorable Seke, Honorable Mosala, Honorable Maybeck, Honorable Sushwai, Honorable Matuba, Honorable Hendricks. Indeed, I can't see Honorable Basson here, but we have a quorum. But can
Chairperson, he did join earlier on, maybe his network, or he just logged out again, but he was on the platform, I'm sure.
Okay. Mr. Moore, can you just check for us whether he is still available?
I will do so, sir.
Okay. But otherwise, we do have a quorum. We are on page 15, chapter 5. Let's continue as we did in the previous meeting.
Greetings, Chairperson.
Yes.
My name is Pumelele Ngema, the Parliamentary Legal Advisor. My colleague, Ms. Arnold Adila, is attending into another committee meeting, so I shall be taking the committee through the process that she started the last time there was a committee meeting. I would request the...
Yeah,
okay, Mr. Chairperson, you need a test. Okay, I shall do that. It is hot.
Please. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
I was indicating whether the committee secretary is able to flight the bill for me, or members do have copies at hand so that I can get right ahead with the process. And with your permission, if I may switch off the video in case of the bandwidth getting weaker, Chairperson.
Yes. Yeah. Members, what are we saying? Do we have copies? I do have a copy. I don't want to assume that everybody do have a copy.
I'll try and share on my end, Chairperson.
Okay,
if members can
we
tell
do.
Me whether it's showing as well.
Okay. There we are.
Thank you, Chairperson. We had ended, as you pointed out correctly, on clause 30, which was on the appointment of employees. So I am starting on chapter 5, but perhaps just to make a note, Chairperson, that when we get to 37, which is related to the appointment of employees on 30, I will just point out some questions, Chairperson, for the department to assist as part of the members' questions as well. And I trust that the department is also with us. So, Chairperson, I'm starting on Chapter 5. Chapter 5 of the bill is basically on financial matters and how the agency is to be held accountable through reporting and other mechanisms. Chairperson, I will read each clause unless the Chairperson indicates otherwise, and then take questions after reading each provision.
Take us through chapter 5, the whole of chapter 5.
All of it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah.
Clause 31, funds of the agency. The funds of the agency consist of any funds transferred to the agency at the date referred to in section 37.2 and 37.5. B, monies appropriated by Parliament, revenue from water use charges due to the agency as contemplated in Chapter 5 of the National Water Act, and the pricing strategy established by the Minister in terms of Section 56 of the National Water Act. It will also include loans that are raised. It will include income derived by it on investments in terms of Subsection 3. It will also include income derived by it in performance of its functions, income generated through developing, leasing out, or otherwise managing its assets within the scope of this Act. Furthermore, Chairperson, as we go to page 16, it will include income earned by the agency's participation in joint ventures with water services institutions, as contemplated by Section 19 of the Water Services Act. It will include proceeds derived from the sale of the agency's assets, fines payable by persons as a penalty on their conviction of offences created by this Act. I believe this speaks to administrative fines, Chairperson. It will not necessarily be fines from the court processes, because I don't think there's a link. K, recovery of improper profits from board members or persons concerned. Grants or donations received by the agency. Subsection 2. The agency must utilize its funds to cover costs in connection with the performance of its functions in terms of this Act, as well as any additional functions that may be assigned or delegated to it by the Minister from time to time. Any donation or contribution in accordance with any conditions that may be imposed, provided it is not inconsistent with the purpose of this Act. C, it can also utilize any money appropriated by Parliament for the purpose for which it was granted. Number 3, the agency may invest any of its funds not immediately required by the agency with such directions as the Minister and the Minister of Finance may determine. Sub 4, the agency must distribute to other water management institutions such revenues that it may collect on their behalf in terms of any billing and collection agreements, either with the Minister or with other water management institutions, less any fees or commissions that the agency may charge for these services in terms of the agreements. Clause 32, Chairperson, is on government support to agency and loans by the agency and its subsidiaries. Parliament may fund the normal expenditure of the agency out of money appropriated for the purpose. Two, a request for financial support must be prepared by the agency by a date determined by the minister in order for it to be subjected to the evaluation process for inclusion in the annual compilation and exposition of the government's expenditure proposal appropriation purposes. Number four, subsection 3A, Chairperson. The agency and its subsidiaries may not borrow money without the prior written approval of the minister, granted after consultation with the Minister of Finance. Sub B, any decision to borrow money taken without the approval contemplated in paragraph A is of no force and effect. We move to clause 33, Chairperson, which is on annual budget and the planning, financial planning, and the corporate plan of the agency. The annual budget, the long-term financial plan, and the corporate plan of the agency must be submitted to the minister as the shareholder, representative, and executive authority for approval. Sub 2, the financial year of the agency is for the period 1 April to 31 March in the following year, except that the financial year of the agency begins on the incorporation date and ends on 31 March. Sub 3, the corporate plan, in addition to the matters specified in the Public Finance Management Act, contain A, financial and performance indicators and targets considered by the board to be appropriate based on indicators and targets contained in shareholders' compact, B, any other information that the board considers necessary, and C, such information as may be directed by the minister, subsection 4. In preparing or revising a financial and performance indicators targets referred to in subsection 3, the board must have regard to A, the shareholders' compact entered into with the minister, B, the need to maintain the agency's financial viability, C, the need to maintain reserves at a level determined by the minister from time to time, especially to provide for Roman Figure 1, the development of national water resources infrastructure, as instructed by the minister, Roman Figure 2, to provide for any estimated future demand for the services of the agency, and lastly, Roman Figure 3, any need to improve the accessibility of and performance standards for the services provided by the agency. D, the need to meet the development objectives of government and in accordance with sections 27(1)(b) and 27(2) of the Constitution and any other matter that can be determined by the minister. So, clause 34, Chairperson, is on submission of quarterly reports and the corporate plan. The board must submit quarterly reports to the minister at the end of each quarter, and which must illustrate how the national water policy and plans are complied with. Subsection 2, the board must revise its corporate plan annually and must A, take national water policy into consideration, and B, at least 30 working days before the beginning of each financial year, make a copy of the corporate plan available to the minister. Sub 3, the minister may, for paragraph A, within 60 working days after receiving a copy of a prepared corporate plan, or B, within 30 working days after receiving a copy of a revised corporate plan, make comments on the plan to the board. Sub 4, the board must consult in good faith with the minister following communication to it of the minister's comments and must make any changes to the corporate plan that are agreed upon by the minister and the board. The minister may from time to time direct the board to include in or omit from a corporate plan any matter, including a financial matter. Sub 6, before giving a directive under this section, the minister must consult with the board as to any matter to be included or omitted in the directive. Sub 7, the board must comply with the directive given under this section unless adequate financial arrangements cannot be made to fund the implication of the directive, the implementation of the directive. I move to clause 35, chairperson, its own financial statements and annual report. The board must prepare and submit financial statements to the minister in accordance with established accounting practice, principles, and procedures comprising sub A, a statement reflecting with suitable and sufficient particulars the income and expenditure of the agency during the preceding financial year, and B, a balance sheet showing the state of its assets, liabilities, and financial position as at the end of that financial year. Within 5 months after the end of each financial year of the agency, the board must prepare and submit to the minister an annual report and financial statements in the prescribed form. Where required, the financial records must indicate separate activities or projects of the agency. Sub 4, the agency may publish its annual report and financial statements and make copies available at the offices of the agency for inspection. Clause 36, chairperson, is on board to notify minister of significant events. If any matter arises that might prevent or materially affect the achievement of the objects of the agency in terms of the corporate plan or financial and performance indicators and targets contained in the corporate plan, the board must immediately notify the minister of the existence of such a matter. I see there is a hand, chairperson.
No, it does matter. That was the last. Before we end at 6, I look at the hands.
Thank you, chairperson. I am done with chapter 5.
Yeah, that's why I remember I said let's deal with chapter 5 and go to chapter 6 later. But then I will allow them hands.
Thank you, chair.
But I must just say that on 4 of 35, you amended the writing there. It does not say the agency may publish. It says the agency must publish.
My bad, chairperson. My bad.
Yeah, it must, yeah.
I'll read it again. The agency must publish its annual report and financial statements and make copies available at the offices of the agency for inspection. Thank you for that, chair.
Yeah. Okay. You said I saw two hands, the hand of Honorable Mohlala and Honorable Hendricks. Thus far, those two.
No, thank you so much.
Yes, Ms. Mohlala?
Yeah, no, thank you so much, Chairperson. Looking on clause 31. Monies for the agency are appropriated by Parliament, amongst others. However, when you look in 33, clause 33, 1 to 4, and you look as well in clause 34 and clause 35, submission of the long-term financial plan and corporate plan of the agency is only submitted to the minister. I suggest an amendment that this must be tabled in Parliament as well. Thank you.
Okay. We'll respond to that later. It is Honorable Hendricks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honourable Chair, can I direct you to page 16? There's a clause K. And another source of income is receiving profits which board members got. And so the proposed amendment or law sends a very strong signal that board members are corrupt. And that's why there must be provision to recover corrupt monies that they may get. Now, we can't damage the reputation of board members by having such a clause, suggesting that board members are naturally very corrupt. And we know there's 1,000 cases, disciplinary and criminal cases at the moment. But we can't have that in legislation. It damages the image of a board member. A board member must be upright. But maybe the drafters were very realistic and realized that we are unable to prevent this from happening. So, Chairman, I feel that must be redrafted so that we don't besmirch the good name of board members. But I don't have a quarrel if there are steps or something that is, and I don't know the answer, that will prevent this from happening, because prevention is better than cure. Then the other point, Mr. Chairman, is if we look at Clause 36, it says that the minister must be informed if there are serious irregularities. We are an oversight committee. Shouldn't our chairman be informed? Because it is otherwise it makes our job useless. We're supposed to do oversight. So when there is something material and urgent and dangerous to the mandate of the agency, yes, the minister must be informed. But I also feel that the portfolio committee chair at least must be informed so that we can do our oversight at all. Now the minister takes months and months to deal with it, and we don't even know about it in our face. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Mr. Chairman.
I did not hear your lawyer. That first point on page 16, which clause was that? Honorable Hendricks? Where did you raise that point?
Yeah, page 16K.
Okay, okay.
I'm not so good with these clauses.
Okay. Mr. Moore?
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to ask, because obviously one of the points raised by the Honourable Hendricks regarding the position of the committee within this legislation, I know I left the session before the end last time, and I wanted to check. There had been some discussion of some form of repositioning of the document to include the committee in various places throughout the documentation, and there seemed to be general agreement towards that. My assumption is at this stage nothing has yet been changed to include us, because obviously when we talk about reporting to the minister and wanting it to come to the committee, that would be part of the holistic changes that we were looking for as the committee to this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to your good self and everyone connected in this platform. Chair, I think I would want to agree with the colleagues to say right from the beginning last week when we started this process of clause by clause, we had a concern that the role of Parliament is not clearly defined. And as much as we understand that some of the matters can be correctly captured in the PFMA, but we want this bill to capture them, to clearly define our role or the role of Parliament. It cannot be that Parliament appropriate money and at the end of the day, the agency is not accountable to Parliament. We want it to reflect
in this piece of a bill. So I think I want to align myself with them. And I think we have agreed in the previous meeting, and the chair was upfront also raising this matter sharply. So I think, chair, that's basically my input, that let the role of parliament be clearly defined in this piece of legislation. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Now, Honorable Moore, remember, take this meeting as the meeting of the sixth. So what we did not finalize on the sixth is the continuation. They were not supposed to amend based on what we said on the sixth, because it is still a continuation of the meeting. But I think your concern, as raised by the other members, is concerned, is right in terms of the intended amendment of the clauses. But you could not have had it already being amended in the clause, because it is a continuation of the meeting. My one or two things I want to raise, department, on page 16, it says there that the income generated through, it says that the funds of the agency consist of, amongst others, income generated through developing, leasing out, or otherwise managing its assets within the scope. In one of the clauses, at the beginning of the clause, that the board is not allowed to lease out the assets of the company, not to sell it. Now it says that here that you can generate money out of leasing out of assets. Is that not a contradiction? Maybe it's my wrong reading. On page 16, as a continuation, it says it will also have money proceeds derived from the sale of the agency assets. It's the same point I'm asking. Is the board allowed to sell assets without necessarily, even the minister is in the writing, it says he's not allowed to sell the assets of the agency. Why is that clause? At item 32 or clause 32 says that any decision to borrow money taken with approval contemplated in paragraph A is of no consequence. I would want to understand that, okay, it meaning that if you are saying it is of no consequence, means it shall not be done. But remember, a report is an afterthought. This person will have acted, will have done, and it is found that it is something that was not allowed to be done, therefore it is of no consequence. What shall then be the consequence of that which would have been done, which might have compromised the standing of either the board or parliament in the process thereof? Lastly, on page 35, page 17, clause 35. It says the agency must publish its annual report and financial statement and make copies available at the office of the agency for inspection. There is no frame there. Others, it says within 5 months of that or about 6 months of that, but this one does not have a time frame. Don't you want to propose a time frame there? Thank you very much. I don't see any other hand that has come out. Department, you can give us some answers on the things you are raising.
Thank you, Chair. This is Lynette Milne, and I'll respond to these particular questions. On the first questions from Ms. Mukhlala on the long-term budgets and the planning of the department. this whole set and this whole chapter has also been benchmarked against what is normal practice in the ordinary course of business for state-owned companies, and has been modeled against the framework of the PFFA. So when it comes to the long-term planning, because these are long-term immovable assets, raw water assets that the agency is building, because TCTA is currently building 4 mega projects, as well as will continue to build, these are your long-term financial models that then translate into your budget and then also feed into the pricing models as well. So these are all carefully tied up to where the authorizations sit. So the authorizations ultimately sit with the short-term budgets that has inputs from these long-term financial models, as well as secondly, Chair, through you, the authority to be able to borrow, because the funding strategy is then also extracted from this. So the funding strategy is then approved by the minister through the Minister of Finance as well. So the agency may not then borrow. So to answer your question about what are the consequences of lending without having authority, it makes it null and void. So in other words, you cannot, excuse me, you cannot enter into a funding or a loan agreement with a development agency or raise money in the capital markets if it is not approved in your borrowing authority. So it does become null and void. So financial companies or the financial sector would carefully have a look at your authority to be able to borrow before entering into agreements with you. So that just deals with, so what are the consequences then if you borrow and it's of no effect? The second point raised by Mr. Hendricks is relating to the board, and particularly pointing out the improper profits from board members or persons connected and contemplated in Section 20. I agree that we could relook at this language because it's not just wrongdoings by board members. I think it is an obligation of the agency to be able to collect any monies that have been improperly used and need to be recouped. And that is also very strongly worded in the PFMA. So I'm quite happy that we look at this and not just have a clause that particularly has a carve-out for board members. When it comes to the position and the role of this particular committee to create that oversight, I think there are many points to be able to have a look at where that oversight comes from. And I think it starts off with, you know, we also mentioned in this particular chapter, the shareholders compact, because that's the compact that the minister has. And from that, the board would need to determine the performance of the agency together with its targets. So if you are doing two very important things in this agency, the one is to make sure that your existing assets that are in the ground are fit for purpose and that they are delivering bulk raw water. The second one is that you are building and augmenting that with new massive dams, pipelines and tunnels to be able to bring in additional water. I think those targets building on time, within budget and according to the prescripts of what is the developmental objective needs to be carefully set out. So this is then taken from the shareholders compact into the corporate plan, and then it's reported on in the financial statement. So there are many ways of saying, how do you participate then more actively in the oversight? And the first thing is to understand what is in that shareholders compact and to have, you know, some say in that, because what do we want? We want to make sure that we have sufficient raw water on time at the right price and delivered in areas where there is scarcity. What we're also achieving through this agency is to wrap in the social needs as well, so that you both have the economic and social development objectives that are achieved. When it comes to the sale of assets, this is a clause that is generally put in because it allows the organization to operate in the ordinary course of business. So sorry for that. So what you have over here is this could mean anything. So you have a policy that the board would need to have a look at, which then goes hand in hand with what you call a delegation of authority. What the Act needs to do is to allow for this as an activity. So in other words, you have the sale of assets would, for example, include even the sale of movable assets. They are not talking about selling our dams and our tunnels. We're actually talking about the sale of assets like your cars that have reached end of life, and how do you do that, or if you need to sell something. But the details of that is generally set out in a policy which is set out by the board. Then you craft that into procedures to say how do you do you know, what is set out in your policy, and it's read together with a delegation of authority. So those three instruments are then used. But this bill needs to make provision for the fact that you will have these times where you need to sell an asset, but it's not the immovable assets that you sell. If you do transfer assets, it's with the authority of the minister, and then it may need to go to, for example, a CMA or a water board. So if you, for example, are building on behalf of one of the water boards, because that's allowed for in the bill, if you have the competencies, the skills, we can build, for example, and do a build program for Umgeni Water. So that's kind of, so it allows and contemplates for the concept of being able to then sell assets. Then I've dealt with the consequences of that. And then on the point, the final point that was raised about publishing your annual report, this is generally done because it's put in a format to be able to publish once it's been approved. So it's very difficult to put a timeline on this. And the very reason for that is you have when the agency needs to perform. In other words, it delivers its financial statements to the minister. It needs to provide financial statements to National Treasury. But when you publish it, it's after you've also dealt with the comments of the AG. And that may take a bit of time to be able to close out. And we know that we've had those instances before. What you don't want to put in here is something which says you need to publish it within, say, 3 months after it's been approved by the minister or submitted to the minister. You may not have completed those financial statements. There may be issues that are being held up. And this is, practice has shown this over the last number of years in finalizing your financial statements with the AG. So there are a number of points that often you cannot publish until you've actually closed out on some of those items. So to put that in here would be a restriction and would not help the agency in future to be able to operate if these things do happen, because then you would effectively be unlawful, and that in itself would not help the operations. Thank you, Chair.
Any other person?
Chairperson, can I come?
A minute. Department, is there anyone want to add more? Okay, Nan.
I just wanted to provide further clarity on Section 31K, 31.1K. It is also read with Section 20, which is from a governance perspective included here. And it is separate from all other persons which are included in the point above, which is at J, and speaks to fines payable by persons as a penalty on conviction of offences created by this Act. So in this specific clause, we refer to board members, not to besmirch the name of the board members. However, it's a standard governance practice. You will find it also reads in terms of the Companies Act, where board members must disclose certain financial interests, etc. And in this instance, where a board member has contravened Section 20, all those fines payable will also be regarded as revenue generated or funds that will, sources of funds that go into the agency. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Mkala?
No, Chairperson, I'm a bit now worried in terms of the powers that we are giving to the minister alone. I refuse to grant one person excessive power, as it would be detrimental to the country. Chairperson, in implementing such a clause would lead to the destruction of our country. If this clause is mandated by the PFMA, we should first seek to amend this PFMA, because now we are forced to do a law because the PFMA says this, and we don't agree with the with what the PFMA is saying. We can't give 1% power. We are even refusing now to say Parliament must be part of these processes because we want to give 1% a law. And when we are asked the question that we are getting from the floor is that the PFMA is the PFMA. Let's then amend the PFMA so that we can get this thing into order. We are creating a law here, legislation. It is unacceptable to be constrained by the unjust law. It's unjust for everything to be to the minister. Then even if the minister is just misleading us, we must just go to that direction, because now the PFMA said 1, 2, 3, 4. So let's then start with the PFMA and see what we can do with this PFMA. Because now this bill is not going to assist us. Every time we speak, we've been told that the PFMA says 1, 2, 3. And when we see what is in the PFMA is what is not correct, we don't agree with that thing. I'm a little bit now concerned about this PFMA that keeps kicking in and is not actually is kicking in with wrong things that we don't support, Tina, as members of this parliament. All of us, we said here, we can't give 1% power to run this organization alone. We also want to be part. We want to be involved and run with him. Thank you, or her. Thank you.
Okay. I should think that we if we can just cool up our tempers a bit, it will help. Because indeed, if the PFMA as an act of parliament is hindering us to do one other thing, for now it is still in use. Up until it is amended, it is in use. So you are right, Honorable Musala, that maybe in order for us to can want to do any other thing that we want to do, we must start looking at that PFMA, whether it does not hinder us from doing our work. But you are not going to expect officials of parliament to act against the law of the PFMA on this matter, also because we are wanting to do so, because then they will be breaking the law themselves. They will be breaking the law because they will be doing something outside the law. The good thing is that they are telling us where lies the problem. But if you look at item 34, Honorable Moore and Honorable Musala, and all of us who believe that the minister has been given the more power, if you just read it properly without having the other issues on our mind, it says that 34.3, it says that the minister may, within 60 working days after receiving a copy of a prepared corporate plan, or within 30 days after receiving a copy of a revised corporate plan, make comments on the plan to the board. That's one. The board must consult in good faith with the minister following communication to it of the minister's comments, meaning that when the minister has made the comment, they must go back to him and say, we don't believe you are right here, we believe you are right here, come back, let us talk. And must make any changes to the corporate plan that are agreed upon by the minister and the board. So the power does not lie with him. The board, he must first convince the board of what he wants to do, for the board to agree. Remember, the board is acting on the basis of the compact that we will have. We are part of the stakeholders' compact as parliament. Then 6 says, before giving a directive under this section, the minister must consult with the board as to any matter to be included or omitted in the directive. Last, that the board must comply with the directive given under this section unless adequate financial arrangements cannot be made to fund the implementation of the board. So if, even if the minister can give any other instruction, if the board believes it is not doable, the board has a no to say. What we are saying, I think, is whether, and this is what we have said, whether we are section 75 or section 76, or if, for instance, then our board department does clear that point. There are certain, for instance, your appointment of the judges. We know it is a ministerial dictate, but when the judges are appointed, when the board of SADC are appointed and so forth and so forth, the portfolio committees is involved. But I think it is at the board level. Now, this is not necessarily the board. It is the operation of the board. I'm sure that's where the difference might be. Just explain to us those differences and the difficulties, because if we just continue saying to the members, you can't do this because the PFMA does not say so, you will get this frustrated anger. But if you explain thoroughly what you are meaning, because I start to understand what you are meaning, but explain to it, because I must not be the chairman who understands alone when others have not learned. So the meeting is not my meeting, it's a meeting of members. Take us a little bit deeper. What is it that you think that as a member of parliament, what shall be our role, and how and when does our role become effective? For instance, if we just come as an after effect, as the members are saying, that's what the members are frustrated about. They don't want to become an afterthought participant. They want to be part and parcel of the process. Is it allowable? If yes, at what level and in what form? It will help. But as I'm saying, if you read thoroughly the document, it does not necessarily give the minister that overall power, Mr. Honorable Mishala. It regulates what you will do in conjunction with that, do in conjunction with that. But I think it is not properly explained. So I'm asking that you explain, because honestly speaking, we'll end up having a meeting of disagreement forever if we are not explaining our intention intended for this act to pass. I'm asking that please open up your explanatory capacity and just take us through a bit why things must and will be done in a certain manner as compared to the certain manner that you want it to be done. Department, because we're still going to go on with the clauses, and we're still going to get this frustration of believing and thinking that the parliament is not involved as an oversight authority. But I think the other point which we need not to forget as a matter of principle is that oversight is an afterthought in any way. It is not necessarily a preventative measure. You don't oversight by preventing. You oversight things that people have done and you think that they have done wrong. So you can't oversight me before even I start doing, then you are saying you're oversighting, you're not oversighting. You are co-managing. But let's hear, man, is there any explanation you can get a little bit deeper than what you have just given?
Chairperson, this is Lynette again, so I'm going to jump in and then Bronwyn can add to this. When it comes to the oversight role, two of the most important things in the raw water sector is the first thing is the master plan. And what we've carefully looked at in the formation of the agency is how we're going to be able to separate the functions in terms of what are the operational functions for the development of raw water assets going to look like, as opposed to what stays inside of the department. So that separation is quite important. What stays in the department is the regulation and the planning. So that master plan is pretty much the same as the integrated energy plan. What that means is in that, and we're looking at where's the role of this committee, the role in some of those policy frameworks does become important. It then says inside of that plan, what is needed, where is it needed, and when is it needed, and what is the scope and extent of what is needed. That master plan was set up in 2019 and is now in the process of being revised. That says for the next 50 years, what is the capacity that is needed in the country to be able to support socioeconomic development, but it starts off with what is the condition of the existing assets and what needs to be augmented. It also then further contemplates what sources of water will be used. In other words, surface water, groundwater. Now that is a very important instrument that stays in the department and will then also form part of the oversight committee as it is being updated. Second thing is also the price of water. So in other words, the board needs to make sure that whatever it can do within an affordability framework, so in other words, it's financially viable, it cannot be directed to do anything and build anything if it is not financially viable, because then it needs to engage with the minister and say, but we cannot do this and these are the particular reasons, or this is what we need to be able to make sure that we remain financially viable, because all the assets are sitting in one entity and you need to make sure that these state-owned entities can effectively take care of themselves. In other words, that they have sufficient revenues that are cost-reflective to be able to run the operations. So the pricing also sits in the department. It's an important thing to have oversight over that. When it comes to what sits in the agency, it's operating within envelopes that have been given to the agency to be able to operate. In other words, the minister would direct that according to the scope and extent, I need you to do phase two of Lesotho Highlands. This is how you're going to do it and within what treaties and protocols you need to be able to build and develop it so that we get delivery of water by a particular date at a particular price. That is set out in a directive. The board then has taken these directives and its existing business, which is then the operations and maintenance of the existing asset base. And that asset base is about 100 billion rands worth of assets that you currently have. It needs to have that budget, and it can operate within that budget to make sure that these assets are effectively kept in a state which we call fit for purpose so that they can deliver water across the country to the water boards to then to be able to disseminate to municipalities, which then bring it to tap. So where oversight is important, it's important to make sure that the agency runs its operations, firm directives that have been set. All of that, the main oversight that and the main thing that one would look at inside of the government is the ability to be able to regulate to make sure that your planning tools are correct and that we make sure that we take account of things like climate change, changes in conditions, urbanization. That all sits in your big plans. That is staying in the department. So you have oversight over your agencies, but your big choices and your big levers come and will remain with what's inside of the department, which then also falls within the ambit of oversight by the portfolio committee. And I'm sure that Bronwyn can add to this.
Yeah, I'm sure the explanation does want to take us a little bit to where we want to. But that separation between the five board, there is the shareholder being Parliament. And Parliament, in this case, is represented by the minister. So that's how they might think, that we speak to the shareholder speaks to us, and the shareholder accounts to whatever they are accounting. But I think there is an element of in-depth discussion that must be. Represented by the on the or
confirm that the sole shareholder of the agency is in fact the Minister of Water and Sanitation. I wanted to just add on to what Lynette Milne has just indicated as to the role of Parliament and versus the role of the DWS, and confirm that the DWS tables the annual report, the corporate plan, the strategic plan, and the tariffs, and Parliament is the overall oversight body and is entitled to call on the department as well as the agency to account before it at any time, just as it does with any other entity on the department. Thank you.
Okay.
Chairperson.
Yeah.
No, Mr. Mashiru. You know, these laws like these ones, they are ambiguous sometimes. They've got ambiguity. Because let's say you get a minister who doesn't want to understand. He will be quoting those legislations saying that it speaks to the minister. Let's make a law that allows multi-party democracy. We cannot have a law that the minister is everything. I don't agree with this thing. I think these officials must go back and look at these things. We're not going to agree with something that at the end, it is not a clear. There is a minister who appointed these board members. He appointed these board members. And when thinking about these things from the beginning, we were also against the appointment of these board members by a single person who, I mean, who also appoint the nomination committee. That is also her responsibility. Everything is on the minister. So let's not be fooled here, because we're going to end up giving one person a power. And being told of some shareholding, let's clear the ambiguity. It must just be clear that the parliament get involved. There's somewhere where parliament must get involved. We cannot allow these things of parliament being the oversight body. Yes, we are the oversight body, but certain things, those reports must come to us so that we can also have something that we say about this report. Not go to the minister, agree with the board members that he has appointed, agree with everything. Then at the end of the day, when they come to us, we have nothing to say because the legislation says the minister can. Party democracy. You don't know in the next parliament if the EFF will be in power. Then we'll be using this power or abusing the power as it is now legislated in this bill. If the PMFA doesn't allow us to do this thing, let's go back to the drawing board and amend this PFMA. I think it's the one that is now not, we are not blaming the officials. The officials are working as the PFMA. The PFMA is the one that is denying us rights to do what we want to do, to amend the legislation and allow multi-party democracy. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, I think we agree, Honorable Mzala, that if we believe that, for instance, I was in the municipality, we had an issue with the MFMA. It is now that I hear that in Salga, they are going to look at the MFMA dictates, because it was hindering quite a lot of, I've heard other people saying that, even yesterday in Gauteng, people were saying, because the law says the minister can't sit, the minister can't sit in the adjudication processes. But when things are not done, the minister must answer. And there was a saying there that there must be a clause that says after having appointed a contractor, there must be a memorandum of understanding between the minister and the contractor that he shall deliver. It's something of that sort. So, unfortunately, we are a legal entity that we must act within the law. If we have to amend that which hinders us from doing our work, let's do it. It is not amended. I can bet you if we are going to want to say officials must act outside the PFMA, we will charge them. The first people to charge them will be us. Why did you do it? Because the PFMA does not allow. So, and I'm sure there will be too reluctant to do that. we are identifying a need of a snack that we need to look into. Unfortunately, we might not have enough time to go for the PFMA because our time is ending. But I think some of the legacy report that we might give, that we believe that the PFMA is a problem in as far as us move, that that's Parliament getting into the nitty-gritties of the work that's being done. And maybe even to amend that, which we think is oversight should be a little bit deeper than just the receiving report at the final end of the lot. But for today, I mean, for this now, honestly speaking, if we say we must stop the bill in order for us to go and amend the PFMA first, then the bill, the bill, we'll be shooting ourselves in the leg. What we must say is that the officials must know that as and when the consequences of the ambiguity of the PFMA that we does not agree get amended, it must consequently be interpreted to have amended the even any other thing that was hindered upon by its existence at the time that we went through it. But I doubt the meeting wants to say that let's stop now and go for PFMA first, which will be in the seventh parliament. And then we can come back to it. I don't think that's what we're saying. But I'm sure officials will hear what members are saying. The attitude is very clear that there is a desire for a little bit more deeper involvement rather than the way it is in the, and I think it might be in all other committees of parliament that we are not sitting there to hear whether they are not raising the same point, but I think they do. So we will look at it at that moment in time. For now, but in as far as it being within the constraints of the law, let's amend it to still continue to be like that, but consider that which we want to say where we are not supposed to be in engaging as per the law, we will not be engaging because the law does not allow us to do that. But up until we amend the act to allow us, we shall do that. For now, we are not, Honorable Michelle, unfortunately. I get your sense and I agree with you, but we will be acting outside the law as your lawmakers. It can't be correct. Okay, I'm sure you heard that officials look at it, work towards wanting to work on the basis of that. Chapter 6.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think just to add on what you have said and what the department has said just before I go on, Chairperson, as you indicate, members should also recall the engagements on clause 3. Where the department also explained the relationship and extent of the application of the PFMA as well as the Companies Act and the provisions of this bill. So from what was deliberated previously and what is being raised right now, we are and have been engaging on looking into those issues, especially under clause 3. On the establishment of the agency and the application of the other acts that are already in place. But I think to add to that, what is crucial as well is that there are specific portfolios, and that is why there are specific portfolio committees as well. So even if Parliament is a creature of statute and the legislature, because of the structure that is in place and the committees, we cannot be jumping around and proposing or making attempts to amend other existing legislation. So I think the point made that perhaps in order not to hinder the process of this bill while considering other concerns, it's a matter that the committee may add in the report and point out the frustrations in relation to the existing legislation as was already deliberated in respect of the Companies Act and also the Public Financial Management Act. Having said that, Chairperson, I think also on the issue of the involvement of Parliament, whether it's a National Assembly
or it's both Parliament as the House is NCOP and NA. I think from what we have heard and what is in place as the question under Chapter 5 is on accountability. If we look at the Supreme Law in Section 55 of the Constitution, which makes it clear that for Parliament to function properly, we do need to have mechanisms that we will ensure that oversight is properly done. So I think in this instance, as well as what the department has explained in respect of separating the roles, the functions and the responsibility thereof, it would be crucial then to keep in mind that we do have Section 65 and the mechanisms that Parliament has put in place to ensure that oversight is effective and efficient whenever necessary, whether beforehand, before issues get out of hand, or whenever there's an issue that is taking place, thus having to have a distinction for what is required, for example, in the questions that were raised for Clause 36. If we look at Clause 36, for an example, just outside of the submission of the report, whatever kind it may be, or the strategic plans or the corporate plans, if we look at Section 36, the empowering provision under 36 is very circumscribed in respect of matters that would be relating to significant events that the agency wants to do. And because of the relationship that the agency and the minister would have, it is seeking to actually edify that relationship and ensure that nothing goes under the radar without the minister being aware, and only to come at a later stage when there is a crisis or whatever that might arise. So for us, to be clear, the committee, if it's insisting that then in every provision there must be involvement of Parliament or involvement of the committee through it being the extended arm of the National Assembly, we need to be clear whether Parliament will be able to take that exercise outside the programs and the planning of the committee within the dictate of Section 55, which would allow for an open and broad exercise of oversight and taking accountability and ensuring that there is accountability. Because Section 55 enables Parliament, enables the National Assembly in this instance, to actually take oversight even on state agencies as organs of state and not only just the departments, as it was pointed out. But in light of what is currently in place, that can be done through the processes of reporting using the oversight mechanisms, unless the committee insists that all the provisions where there is submission, we must then effect the changes that brings in the involvement of the NA or Parliament. But to add, Chairperson, in what we are preparing as we go ahead to the draft, you would recall that under Clause 7, it was already said we must make the involvement of the NA in this process, so that whatever is taking place there will come to the NA as well as the committee. So in light of the deliberations as they are going ahead, such amendments are still being processed and they will come before the committee once the whole process of clause by clause is done, Chairperson. So I thought I should just add that into the basket for explanation purposes, Chairperson. I thank you.
Chapter 6. It's a very good mind-blowing information. It's okay. Accept that.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are now on Chapter 6. Which Chapter 6 is a chapter that's engaging on the transfers of the National Water Agency as well as the TCTA, which eventually this act would repeal and de-establish once all the processes are implemented. I will read Clause 37, Chairperson. It says transfer of national water resources infrastructure, 37(1)(a), Section 115 of the National Water Act applies in respect of the transfer of national water resources infrastructure to the agency. B, the minister may declare by notice in the Gazette, which government waterworks are deemed to be national water resources infrastructure
and are to be vested in the agency, and may determine from time to time which infrastructure is no longer national water resources infrastructure and to which water management institution it should be transferred. Sub 2. Subject to subsection 1, the minister must, within a period of 12 months after the date of incorporation of the agency and in consultation with the agency, determine by notice in the Gazette a date on which the minister will transfer to the agency the national water resources infrastructure, which immediately before that date vested in the department. Sub 3, the transfer contemplated in subsections 2 includes A, all assets and associated liabilities, B, all water user agreements, contractual and non-contractual rights and obligations, functions, directives, and duties associated with the national water resources infrastructure. C, all operation and maintenance responsibilities of the national water resources infrastructure. D, all financial advisory services, including systems for the billing and collection of revenue, payable for water use from the national water resources and infrastructure. E, and the transfer of employees and officials of the department associated with the national water resources infrastructure in terms of section 197 of the Labor Relations Act 95, Act number 66 of 1995. 4, the minister must, either by way of a written directive or in the shareholders compact, give direction in respect of the utilization of any surplus revenue, if any, towards the towards capital improvements or social projects of the national water resources infrastructure being transferred. Sub 5, the minister must, by notice in the Gazette, determine a date within 12 months after the incorporation of the agency or such extended period determined by the minister by notice in the Gazette after the incorporation date and subject to subsection 10, on which date the minister shall transfer to the agency 1, A, the whole of the commercial enterprise of the TCTA, including all assets, liabilities, rights, and obligations of whatsoever nature and howsoever arising, who acquires such enterprise as a going concern, B, the TCTA's treaty functions, and C, the TCTA's non-treaty functions. On the date contemplated in subsection 5, the agency becomes the owner of all movable and immovable property, which immediately prior to the date determined by the minister in subsection 5A was registered in the asset registers of the TCTA, B, fell under the control or custody of the TCTA, while C was possessed, occupied, or used by the TCTA as if it was the owner thereof, and D was registered with any registrar of deeds in the name of the TCTA. Sub 7. On the date contemplated in subsection 5, in all pending litigation, including arbitration, the agency must be substituted as a litigating party for the TCTA, as if the agency was a litigant from the commencement thereof. Sub 8, on the date contemplated in subsection 5, in all contracts to which the TCTA is a party, the agency must substitute the TCTA as a contracting party, as if the agency had been a contracting party from the negotiation and conclusion thereof. Sub 9, on the date contemplated in subsection 5, in all guarantees issued in respect of the financial obligations of the TCTA, including any guarantees issued under section 66 or 70 of the Public Finance Management Act, the agency must substitute and hereby substitutes the TCTA as a contracting party, as if the agency had been the entity guaranteed from the beginning. Sub 10. On the date contemplated in subsection 5, all existing financial instruments of the TCTA must be regarded as having been issued by the agency. Sub 11. Despite any law to the contrary, any reference to the TCTA or a representative of the TCTA in any law, contract, register, or record created in terms of the statute, contract, or other legal document must, with effect from the date contemplated in subsection 5, be regarded as being a reference to the agency or a representative thereof. Sub 12. The minister may not determine the date contemplated in subsection 5 until such time as the government of Lesotho has been consulted on the transfer of the treaty functions and non-treaty functions of the TCTA to the agency. B. Until such time as an arrangement has been made with the TCTA's primary creditors to the satisfaction and approval of the Minister of Finance in compliance with the Public Finance Management Act. And C. An arrangement has been made for the transfer of personnel employed by the TCTA to the agency in terms of Section 197 of the Labour Relations Act. Clause 38, Chairperson, the establishment of the TCTA, sub 1. Subject to Section 37, the Minister must establish the TCTA as a statutory body after the date determined by the Minister in terms of Section 37.5 and may take steps to wind up the TCTA. The establishment of the TCTA must be by notice in the Gazette after consultation with the Minister of Finance, the board of the TCTA, and the board of the agency. Sub 3, clause 30 of Government Notice 277 published in Gazette number 21017 of 24 March 2000 is hereby repealed. Sub 4, the Minister may direct the transfer of any function or service of the TCTA prior to its de-establishment to the agency by a written directive. Sub 5, any guarantee or indemnity expressed or implied by the state in favor of any contractual obligation or associated liability by the TCTA remains valid, binding, and enforceable. Moving to clause 9, with your permission, Chairperson, registering of real rights. The relevant registrar of deeds must make the necessary entries in the register in terms of the Deeds Registration Act of 1937, which is Act number 47 of 1937, of the vesting of any real rights of the state in the agency in terms of this act. Clause 14, transfer of personal servitude. Despite any law to the contrary, a personal servitude, whether registered or not, held by the minister or a water management institution may be transferred from A, the minister to the agency, or B, a water management institution to the agency. Sub 2, the relevant registrar of deeds must register a notarially executed deed of cession to transfer a registered personal servitude in terms of subsection 1. Clause 41. Disposal and transfer of national water resources infrastructure. National water resources infrastructure may not be transferred or disposed of by the agency without the approval of the minister if its value exceeds an amount determined from time to time by the minister by noticing the Gazette with the approval of the Minister of Finance. Clause 42, acquiring state land. Upon request by the agency, in consultation with the minister and the ministers responsible for public works or land affairs, as the case may be, land may be made available by the state for transfer or registration of a servitude over any state land for the performance of any function by the agency under this Act. That Chairperson puts the end under clause under Chapter 6 and will take the questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It is a very administrative process of how to disestablish the TCTA as we have seen it already. But I'm sure if I want allow people that want to raise their hand, but to me it is very administrative rather than political. I will allow hands of those that want still to ask questions on these administrative issues.
We are fine, sir, with that chapter.
Let's go to chapter 7.
I have just a few questions, Chairperson, for the department to assist, as I indicated under clause 37 and 31. Chairperson, if we look at clause 31, it is
do you want to ask administrative questions to the department, or you want us to ask them?
Chairperson, it's the substantive questions that relate to the content of the bill that might create some confusion if it's left undealt with, and for the members to take notice of those and the responses.
Okay. I would have thought that you would have tested that with them. If they are comfortable with it, you manage it administratively rather than politically.
But Chairperson, the bill is before committee now. There's nothing we can do on it without the instruction of the committee and the committee deliberating on those.
Okay.
Chairperson, a question there in respect of the transfer and appointment of employees. So it relates to clause 30 as well as what is indicated in respect of the transfer, which was raised to a 37, Chairperson, 37 with regards to the transfer of water resources, infrastructure and personnel in respect of 37.2E. So what I wanted to check, Chairperson, from the department, and whether the members also find it right, there is a power that clause 30 gives to the chief executive officer to appoint new members that will be part of the agency, as we can see in 31. But then again, under clause 37, which is the first clause under chapter 7, Chairperson, there is the same power, which, but basically in this instance, indicates that employees within the department under the water resources infrastructure can be transferred into the agency. As I said, Chairperson, it's 37.3E, which basically reads as follows, and if the department can just explain whether there will be transfer of those employees within the department and what is the reasoning before. And it's also the same, there will be transfer of employees from the TCTA. So the question is whether the agency will not then be inflated with too many staff officials as these transfer and the appointments allow. 37.3E, Chairperson, is enabling that there shall be the transfer of employees and officials of the department associated within the National Water Resources Infrastructure in line with Section 197 of the Labor Relations Act, which is the same provision that in respect of the TCTA employees under 37.12 will also be happening. So that is just what I wanted to bring before the members and the department for clarity, as Chairperson has noted that there are no questions on this chapter 6. I thank you, Chair.
No, after, as you have raised the point, and I'm sure the department realized that what is written in 37, it can't be correct. We are not expecting the employees of the department to transfer to the agency. We are expecting the employees of the TCTA who are affected by Section 197 of the Act. That clause does not talk to the shareholders, the employees. It talks about the employees of even the department, even if it was in Parliament itself, it was going to be dealing with the department that is so affected. I don't understand why I would think that you are saying the transfer of employees and officials of the department which, for instance, it means that if there is the Department of Water and Sanitation employees who have been helping the work of the TCCA to do work, therefore by decree, they become employees of the TCCA, it can't be correct, it's wrong. And I without necessarily asking a question to me, that we must remove that item E, unless you want to tell us something. Department, why do you want
Yeah. Ron Renaudis speaking. I just wanted to provide clarity on the distinction between the various provisions. Clause 30 refers to new employees. Clause 37.3E refers to existing employees of the department that will be transferring, that are impacted and affected from the water trading entity and part of the infrastructure branch within the department that will be transferring in terms of Section 197, in addition to the TCTA employees that will be transferring to the agency as well. I have with us an HR expert from the department, should you wish to have a further elaboration on the aspect of transfer of employees.
We hear and understand it to mean what you are saying. We are saying that is wrong, because the people who are affected are employees of the TCTA, not the employees of the department. The existence of the new bill. It is our view that you want to minimize, you want to change your staff establishment by putting them in the new bill. It is incorrect.
No, Chairperson, that's not correct. No, Chairperson, the DG here is not correct. The assets are being transferred to the NWRA, as is the water trading entity. If we retain those officials who are responsible for doing that function currently in the department, they will become redundant. We also have all the officials in the department to do the maintenance and operation of the assets which are being transferred to the agency. If we the agency in terms of the Act is responsible for that maintenance and operation. If we don't transfer these officials to the agency, we will remain with about 3,000 employees in the department who will not have any work to do, who will be redundant. So it's very important in the interest of efficiency, for these officials to be transferred to the NWRA, and that has always been the intention.
No, make me understand, DG. The TCTA exists on the basis of the need for it to be, the board to be appointed by the minister. And that does not substitute the responsibilities and duties of the department. Now, let's take for argument's sake the new board of the EURA is now sequestrated. You have now changed the conditions of employment and the conditions of service of these employees who were employed by the Department of Water and Sanitation for lifetime. Employment is now subject to the board or the agency being given the responsibility. Are you not affecting the conditions of employment or conditions of service of long-term employees of the department?
It's important to note that the NWRA is going to, and we've always said this from the start, the creation of the NWRA is a rationalization of currently fragmented functions between the TCTA. The assets based on that.
Recording in progress.
To be transferred into the new entity in terms of Section 197 of the Labour Relations Act. And that section of the Labour Relations Act allows for transfer of employees to another entity as a going concern, and it stipulates that the, as a result of that transfer, the employees cannot be worse off. And we are committed to doing the transfer both of the TCTA officials and of the DWS officials strictly in terms of the Section 197 of the Labour Relations Act.
My assumption is that you will have engaged Labour component of the department on this matter, because you are now in my understanding of the little that I have of the Labour Relations Act, you are now engaging both on what Section 197 and 189.
Chair, this is Conrad Griefer speaking. I'm the Chief Director of Human Resource Management from the department. We will be engaging with organized labor in the departmental bargaining chamber, and we will be negotiating a transfer agreement in line with Section 197 of the Labor Relations Act. So there will be negotiations and agreement at the bargaining chamber with organized labor.
Yeah. You start on the head and finish on the tail. Start on the tail, finish on the head. If we allow this thing to go through and you do not have an agreement with trade unions, what would then happen? HR?
Actually, sorry, could you just repeat that question?
I'm saying if as we're going to be passing the bill now and you go and engage trade unions and you reach a deadlock, there is a strike, you can't transfer those employees and we'll have given you permission here, what will then happen?
Chairperson, is the HP here. Just to add to what Conrad said, we've been in discussions with the unions regarding this issue for what, almost 2 years now. The minister has also been engaging with unions about it. What Conrad was referring to is the formal transfer agreement, which still has to happen, the negotiations around that. Chairperson, with a Section 197 process like this, it's a complex process. It has to be done through the bargaining chamber. The agreements have to be reached. So we're well aware of the complexity and the need for us to manage it very carefully. In the event that the circumstances arise that you are referring to, they will have to be resolved one way or another. The essence, Chairperson, is that this is an executive decision of the government to set up the National Water Resource Infrastructure Agency. If Parliament passes it and it becomes an act, government is within its rights to make these decisions. It will be working within the law if it transfers the staff in terms of this, of Section 197 of the Labour Relations Act. So in the end, the issues will be resolved because government will have acted within the law, and the government has the right within the law to set up the NWIA and also to transfer the staff in terms of Section 197. Even if the process along the way is difficult, and even if there are disagreements along the way and there are delays along the way, eventually what the law prescribes will have to happen. Thank you, Chairperson.
How wide is the ballpark?
Sorry, Chairperson, can you repeat?
How wide is the ballpark according to your sense? Are you far away from one another? Are you close to one another? There's light at the end of the tunnel.
Chairperson, what the unions have told us is that in principle, they don't agree with the establishment of agencies in government. But they have also told us that they recognize the right of governments, which is which has been elected to make these decisions. And they have in our discussions with them in the bargaining chamber, they have agreed on the processes, and they have agreed that we need to work together to conclude a transfer agreement.
Okay. Remember we did in the beginning of it, you did say that you met COSATU, you met the unions, you met the... Okay, I hear you. Chapter 7.
Chair, I do have my hand up.
On chapter 7. If it's on chapter 7, yes. Chapter 7.
I had actually seen two hands as well, Chairperson. However,
You have not started chapter 7. That can only be preemptive.
Chapter 7, powers of the minister. We start on clause 43, delegation by minister. The minister may, in writing and subject to such conditions as the minister may consider necessary, delegate a function entrusted to the minister in terms of this act to the director general of the department. The minister sub 2 may not delegate the power A, to make regulations, B, to appoint a member of the board, C, to determine performance objectives and the strategic direction for the agency, and D, to approve annual reports and financial statements. Sub 3, a delegation, paragraph A, does not prohibit or relieve the minister from performing the functions so delegated in terms of subsection 1, and sub B may at any time be withdrawn or amended in writing by the minister. Subsection 4, the minister may give a directive to the director general in relation to a delegation contemplated in subsection 1. Sub 5, the director general must be contemplated in subsection 4. Clause 44, Chairperson, additional functions to which at some point the department did speak to, attempting to clarify an issue that was in one of the provisions previously dealt with. 44.1a, the minister may request the agency in writing.
Sorry.
The minister may request the agency in writing to plan, design, and construct national water resources infrastructure, or to maintain or rehabilitate any particular national water resources infrastructure, despite the fact that such a project is not included in the agency's corporate plan. Sub B. The minister must identify the source of the funding of a project referred to in paragraph A. Sub 2, the agency may perform additional functions if, under subparagraph A, it does not limit its capacity to perform its function. Subparagraph B, it is not to the financial prejudice of the agency. Or C, it is not likely to detrimentally affect or cause financial prejudice to the agency's customers or stakeholders or another water management institution. Sub 3, the minister may, in consultation with the Minister of Finance and after consultation with the Minister for Public Enterprises and of Trade and Industry, request or authorize the agency to perform its functions outside of the Republic of South Africa. Clause 45, expropriation by the minister.
Why are you laughing?
I'm only human. I'm recovering my strength.
Oh.
Expropriation by Minister, either clause 45, subject to section 25 of the Constitution, The minister may authorize the agency to expropriate property in terms of Section 64 of the National Water Act. Chairperson, Section 64 is an expropriation clause under the National Water Act.
Just repeat this for Honorable Mukala to hear.
Expropriation by minister under clause 45. Subject to section 25 of the constitution, the minister may authorize the agency to expropriate property in terms of section 64 of the National Water Act for a public purpose or in the public interest. And such property may include A, land that is reasonably required. We will have to correct that. Land that is reasonably required for national water resources infrastructure or other purposes connected with the national water resources infrastructure. B, the right to land that it requires temporarily for any of the purposes which the Minister of Public Works is competent to expropriate land. Or C, gravel, stones, sand, clay, water, or any other material or substance on or in the land required for the construction of national water resources infrastructure or for any waterway or any other purposes. Sub 2. Where the minister expropriates any land for the agency in terms of paragraph A, the agency becomes the owner thereof on the date of such expropriation. Sub 3. The Expropriation Act 1975, Act number 63 of 1975, applies to any expropriation required in terms of this act. I move to clause 46, Chairperson. Investigation of agency. Sub 1, the minister may appoint a person to investigate the affairs of or financial position of the agency and compliance by the agency with this act and may recover from the agency the fees and disbursements paid by the minister to that person during the investigation. The agency or an employee of the agency must provide the minister and the person appointed in subsection 1 with such data, information, accounts, documents, and access to assets of the agency as the minister or the person appointed in subsection 1 may require. Intervention by the minister. Subject to subsection 2, the minister may direct the agency to take any action specified by the minister if the agency A has failed to comply with any law or any policy envisaged in this act, is in financial difficulty or is being mismanaged, C has failed to perform its functions effectively, D has failed to comply with any directive given by the minister under this act, or in the shareholders' compact, or E has obstructed the minister or a person authorized by the minister in performing a function in terms of this act. Sub 2, a directive contemplated in subsection 1 must A, be in writing, B, state the nature of the deficiency, C, state the steps that must be taken to remedy the situation, and D, specify a reasonable period within which those steps must be taken. Sub 3, if the agency fails to remedy the situation within the period specified in the directive contemplated in subsection 2, the minister, with the approval of the Minister of Finance, may appoint an administrator, A, after having given the agency a reasonable opportunity to be heard, and B, after having afforded the agency a hearing on any submissions received. Sub 4, if the minister appoints an administrator, A, the administrator may do anything that the agency is authorized or required to do in terms of this act to the exclusion of the agency. B, the board may not, while administrator performs any function, perform that function. C, an employee or contractor of the agency must comply with the directives given by the minister or the administrator, and E, the minister or the administrator may recover from the agency all reasonable costs incurred that are related to the appointment of and performance of the functions by the administrator. Does A, regularly review the progress of the administrator in remedying the situation that gave rise to the appointment of the administrator, and B, within 6 months of appointment, table a report on his or her findings in the National Assembly. Sub 6, once the minister is satisfied that the agency is able to perform its functions effectively, the minister may dissolve the board if, no, Chairperson, sub 6, my eyes are jumpy. Once the minister is satisfied that the agency is able to perform its functions effectively, the minister, with the approval of the Minister of Finance, must terminate the appointment of the administrator. Sub 7A, despite anything contained in this act, but subject to paragraph B, the minister may dissolve the board if the minister, of course shown, loses confidence in the ability of the board to perform its functions effectively and efficiently. B, the minister may dissolve the board only, Roman figure one, after having given the board a reasonable opportunity to be heard, Roman figure two, and after having afforded the board a hearing on any submissions received from the board. Sub C, if the minister dissolves the board, the minister in Roman figure one may appoint an administrator to take over the functions of the board and to do anything which the board might otherwise be empowered or required to do by or under this act, subject to such conditions as the minister may determine, and must, Roman figure two, as soon as it is feasible, but not later than 3 months after the dissolution of the board, replace the members of the board in the same way as the way in which they were appointed. 8A, the cost associated with the appointment of an administrator must be for the account of the agency. B, the appointment of the administrator terminates when the board members have assumed office. 9, despite this section, the minister retains the right at any time to approach a competent court for relief in any matter that he or she considers appropriate in furtherance of the objects of this act. Clause 48, Chairperson, and enabling provision on regulations. The minister may make regulations regarding ancillary or incidental administrative or procedural matter in relation to functions of the agency set out under Section 7 that are necessary to prescribe for the proper implementation or administration of this Act. Sub 2, any regulation that has financial implications may only be made in consultation with the Minister of Finance. That is our Chapter 7. Thank you.
Chapter 7. The Honorable Hendricks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Just a minute, but earlier on, there were two hands, it was yourself and Honorable Seki, in the session, and 6-7, don't say his hand anymore, but carry on.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, clause 45 or 44, you can't give agency a right to expropriate. You heard what the union say about agencies. They know, their members know why they are against agencies. They know what's happening. You also mentioned right at the beginning of your term as chairman of this committee, which you've given great leadership to, that for the past decade, the ministers who were in charge must be severely dealt with. I did not agree with you. It was the director generals who the minister delegated responsible to. So now I'm up to my point. If the minister delegates, they must get the views of Parliament or the portfolio committee, because we've seen history has told us that director generals collude with agencies and the poor minister gets the blame. So we have an opportunity, Chair, to serve the nation with this bill by cleaning up this nonsense of two decades. There must be oversight. You can't even wolf scarf wachter mark me. Thank you very much, Chair.
You are inconsistent, Honorable. When it came to the board members, you said we can't assume them being corrupt, poor board members. When it comes to general DGs, you label them corrupt in the first meeting. Be consistent. DG, don't answer. I will not point at you. I have answered on your behalf. Seki?
Chairperson, I think it's Seki now. I think we are fine, Chair, with regard to the clauses that has been spelled out, including the of land for the national infrastructure. I'm comfortable with that, Chair. Just to get clarity from the department or maybe from our legal advice in terms of clause 47 subsection 5, which reads as thus, when the minister is appointing the admin in terms of the intervention, it says B, within 6 months of appointing the administrator, the minister must table a report, or the administrator must table a report on his or her findings, or the minister must table a report on his or her findings in the National Assembly. I just want to get clarity. Are we not supposed to say Parliament, which will include the NCOP? It should not only be the National Assembly. And just wanted that language.
Yeah, this is section 76. It does not include NCOP when that creates malagrosi. Thank you.
End of oversight, Chair. The bill, yes, but
oversight and lie on NCOP oversight. Have you joined?
Can they clarify, Chair? Allow them to clarify the
matter. Aye. Oh. I'm sure they hear you. They will say that they will clarify. Oh, thank you.
Dada. Now, earlier I wanted to talk, just that you didn't see my hand, on that section 197 issue. Yeah, because Akiriki earlier wanted to... Oh, okay. Then I think there's something that is raised by, and I've been thinking about it, but I couldn't have an answer. What the member, my command member, Al-Jiman.
Henry Henrik.
Yeah, member Henrik. You know, this appointment and disbandment of boards by ministers and powers, that thing, Chair, normally creates problems. And as an oversight committee, we normally just observe it from a distance. I can't remember of any powers given by the law or regulations to say what is the role of the portfolio committee when such things happen, whether in the form of mediation or not. I don't have an answer now, but I'm saying what the member Hendricks is raising, Chair, is something that our parliamentary legal gurus could look at. What is the role of the portfolio committee when such things happen? You'll find that the board is disbanded, the chairperson is dismissed, and there's a to and fro on the court. Rune, we are just briefed, maybe outside, because as an ANC minister, we get briefed. But in terms of the law and oversight, our powers are very limited. So I was thinking that probably there's a wisdom in that for our legal team to look at. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm sure the meeting since the 6th of February, they've been singing that song, and I'm sure people have heard that. That in a way, we need to find a space where we are effective. I mean, you can go back to the time when we were talking about the water tariffs pricing and so forth and so on. So there is a need of a paradigm shift. And I'm sure Honorable Mkhala was making a view that because we sometimes get thrown into for as a way of defeating that this is a PFMA dictate. As she was saying that maybe we need even to look into that. As I give an example that I have even heard even the municipalities are wanting to review the MFMA. So there's nothing wrong in that thing, but I think we can. But the only thing is that, I hear you, you are not saying it is the precondition now, but you are saying, let there be a discussion, let there be a discussion with a view to create space for, is it this representative democracy and participatory democracy is a difficult honorable thing. Representative democracy is that those that you choose to represent you have got the authority and power to represent you up until they come back to you. And it is exactly the point Honorable Seki is questioning. I don't know why she's questioning when the clause gives what she wants. If you look at the what was raised in the I'm sure it was what was it, Seke? But it was okay, yeah. 35B, within 6 months of appointing the administrator, that the minister must table a report on his or her findings in the National Assembly. So it gives that power a bit that now the minister must report to the National Assembly. It is no longer his dictate to so. So that interest is coming to the fore. But I think the members were saying, we do not want that as an afterthought, maybe even as a precon. But at least there is a recognition there that the minister must report back to the, must report to the National Assembly. By implication, the National Assembly must engage what the minister is giving. If the National Assembly does not agree, it would say no. If it agrees, it say yes. At least there is that realization of the existence of the Oversight Committee in the National Assembly. Now, but Honorable say, is it not supposed to be meaning Parliament, Department, Parliament, which is as well as that as National Assembly? Don't you want to change it to Parliament? And if no, why not? She's asking. But I'll ask it to administrative. Let's hear your responses. Department?
Chairperson, I think we are comfortable with having it as National Assembly. We do not want to extend it beyond that. This is, after all, as you indicated, a Section 75 bill. Thank you.
Okay.
If I may, Chairperson. Ms. Gemma.
Yes, I'm okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think let me start. I've got two things that I would appreciate to speak to, but let me start with the last point, which is in respect of the two houses of parliament, the NCOP and the National Assembly, and their extent of involvement. If we look at Section 55 and Section 68 of the Constitution, which set out the powers of each house, but reading them against Chapter 4 and Section 42 more so, which speaks on the composition of Parliament and the setup of Parliament. Parliament, as members would be clear, is made up of the two houses, but their interests and mandates are slightly different in that, for one, Section 55 is not mirrored Section 68. The oversight exercise and power is clear in Section 55 that it is given to the National Assembly. However, Section 68 in setting out those powers of the National Council of Provinces does not go as far as setting out the remit for oversight. But if we look at Section 42.2, which reads of the Constitution, the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces participate in the legislative process in the manner set out in the Constitution. And as I said, that section as well sets out the interest and the mandate and the extent of protecting and exercising that interest of the collective that they will be representing. So if we further take into account one, which states that for in respect of delegated legislation, which states that Parliament in legislation may state the extent of how it wants the process to be engaged and taken further where there is delegated authority. Looking at all these provisions in the Constitution, Chairperson, as the supreme law, one can argue that when making legislation, then despite the dictate and the content of Section 55 and Section 68, should it be the interest or the desire of whichever house, whether it's NCOP or NA or the Portfolio Committee or the Select Committee, being the extensions of the houses, regardless whether it's a functional area that is a Schedule 4, thus outside of Section 76, or whether it is, the dictate and the power is to the committee as well as the House to indicate that in terms of legislation that is before them, what is the extent of their involvement in respect of an authority that they have delegated further. Because we must remember any legislative authority lies with Parliament and provincial legislatures. But should it be delegated in any manner, then the delegation can be circumscribed and be clear how far it goes. Thus, having said that, in respect of how we bring in Parliament or the National Assembly specifically with the exclusion of the NCOP, it's an instruction and a directive that the committee must give. But in terms, if one looks at the law, it can be assumed and incorporated that it's a power that both houses as Parliament can dictate on and give the direction. So I hope that clarifies the question that was posed into the extent of involving either the NA alone as the House of Parliament or Parliament where it will be inclusive of both Houses of Parliament. Our answers lies in Chapter 4 of the Constitution, Chairperson. That is what I wanted to say in respect of that point. In respect of the other one, Chairperson, it relates to Section 64 and Section 65 of the National Water Act, and as well as Section 45 and Section 42 of our bill. Section 42 of our bill speaks to acquiring state land. And I appreciate that acquiring is just in between departments or government alone, where there is land that is already in possession of the state. So that is clear why Section 42 is separated from Clause 45 of our bill. In light of Section of Clause 45, Chairperson, and what is indicated already in the National Water Act in respect of Section 65 and Section 64, and the question that was raised whether an institution may be authorized to expropriate property, I want to attempt to give that answer, taking into account both the provisions of Section 25 in the Constitution and what is in our bill under Clause 17, under Clause 45, as well as the bill that is before Parliament, the Expropriation Bill, which seeks to repeal the Section 75 Act. I mean, the Act number 75, the Act number 63 of 1975, Expropriation Act. As we already hear the year, we would appreciate that 1975 was before our constitutional democracy. So the main reason against having to relook at the Expropriation Act as it stands is also to ensure that it is aligned and it is applying the dictates of Section 25 of the Supreme Law of the country. So that said, Chairperson, under Clause 5, under Clause 45 of our bill, the expropriation power is, once that the enactment takes place, is being given in light of Section 64, which empowers the minister to expropriate. But our provision under 45 goes even further to say the agency may also expropriate. But also under Section 64, there was room for other water agencies that are mentioned there, which was given power in line with the Expropriation Act as it stands. What I would advise the committee to consider and look into, especially because the Expropriation Bill is wandering towards its final stages of becoming a new enactment that repeals the current Expropriation Bill. Instead of us making reference, especially for 45.1, we can perhaps leave 45.3 intact as it is. But for 45.1, we rather speak to a matter that says an expropriation-specific legislation, so that such an amendment would provide room for whatever expropriation legislation that may become an act while it is dealing its legislative processes. And in case, say, mid next year, the Expropriation Act is repealed, then the issues in respect of having to amend this bill, which would, if all processes go fast and go accordingly, would also be an act as soon as possible. So reference to the act that is about to be repealed, but at the same time, we cannot make reference to a bill. The bill is not yet an act. Chairperson, I need to clarify these things because it's crucial, so that if the committee so desires, we must do the correct thing and do the amendments where they would be necessary.
You can't make us to amend the law in decision what will happen tomorrow. We are today, we are not tomorrow. Today, as we speak, is Section 75 of 1975.
That is why I'm indicating expropriation-specific legislation. But that's fine, Chairperson. The second point, we can leave that as it is. It can always find another method to correct it, Chairperson. I just had to bring it to the attention of the committee. The other point, Chairperson, is in respect of temporary expropriation that Clause 45 is speaking to.
There's a bit of overlap and confusion when one speaks of temporary expropriation or agent expropriation. And the old Act does not specify that, the existing 1975 Act. But as we move forward, we are required to ensure that legislation has certainty and is clear. So in respect of the issue of a temporary expropriation, which my appreciation could be that it's the one that's stemming under Section 65 of the existing Act, the National Water Act, perhaps clarity and proper drafting that removes that ambiguity may be necessary in respect of Clause 45 chapters. Those are the two things that I just wanted to bring to the attention of the committee, and I apologize if I've taken a long, winding road, confusing far more than I intended. Thank you.
You can expropriate land temporarily, for instance, if you are building, and as you are building, you might encroach into a verge or a pavement of someone else, and he's refusing. You can expropriate that verge or that pavement. Use it to store your things and so forth in order to finish your building. And after that, you can give back to him if that is the case. I'm sure that it's going to cover that point. I don't think that you can want to expropriate somebody's land temporarily forever, permanent temporary. There's nothing called permanent temporary. So it means the temporary must have a time frame. There must be a reason why you do it, and when are you going to bring it back? It is temporary. But if it is a short term, also it should be short term. And as I'm sure you are saying, that English must be clarified properly. What do they mean by that? But that's like your hand has always been up. Is it a new hand or is it like a hand? Okay. Was there anything you wanted to see at the, Umbongen was just saying, not Umbongen, Ungema was
clarifying. I'm done on my part, thank you.
Okay. Miscellaneous provisions in page 4, in page 22, subsidiaries companies, clause 49. These are very administrative issues that need to be dealt with administratively. But let's get.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Please lower your hand.
Chapter 8, miscellaneous provisions, started clause 49, on page 22. Subsidiary company, the agency may only establish a subsidiary company in terms of the Companies Act A by a special resolution of the board and in consultation with the minister and the Minister of Finance. Clause 50 is on liquidation. Despite any other law, the agency or any subsidiary company, as the case may not be put under judicial management or in liquidation, except the authority of adopted specifically for the purpose. Clause 51, documents relating to litigation against agency. The agency must provide the minister with copies of all summonses and applications in its possession relating to any legal proceedings brought against the agency. Clause 52, transitional provisions and savings. Anything done under the National Water Act and which is still valid at the commencement of this Act remains in force A to the extent that it is consistent with this Act and B until anything done under this Act overrides it. Clause 53, chairperson is on offences and penalties. Perhaps members may consider on the issue of clause 20 and that issue about the consequences to board members who may eventually need the recovery of monies done as it was raised in the deliberations. Clause 53 reads as thus, any person who A, fails to provide access to any book, account, document or asset when required to do so under this Act, B, fails to comply with the directive issued under this Act, C, fails or refuses to give data or information or gives false or misleading data or information when required to give information under this Act, D, refuses to perform a duty or obstructs any person in performance of any of that person's functions in terms of this Act. E, makes personal gains or accept any unauthorized fee or reward, either directly or indirectly as a result of this or her position with the agency. F, the agency's name, logo or design without authority to do so. And G, unlawfully and intentionally or negligently tamper or interferes with any waterwork or any seal or measuring device attached to a waterwork, is guilty of an offense and is liable upon conviction to a fine or to imprisonment or to both a fine and such imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years. The last provision, chairperson, as part of the bill is the short title and commencement. It's clause 54. This Act is called the South African National Water Resources Infrastructure Agency, SOC Limited Act 2023, and comes into effect on a date that will be determined by the President by proclamation in the Gazette. That is the last provision of the bill, and what follows thereafter, chairperson, is a memorandum. So that's the end of the last chapter on the bill, chapter 8. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. On the other hand, if there is any, this, as I'm saying this, the last clauses here are very administrative. Those that enable the agency to work. If we all agreed, can I get the mover that with the amendment made, the document can be sent. This is an A. We will get a B. I mean, it will totally be
No, Chairperson, it must still be A. It must still be A. Since the changes effected before they are incorporated. The B version is what incorporates what the members would have adopted as the proposed changes.
Okay. So we can now send it to a process of B.
We will first have to send it to the process of effecting the changes, and then the draft A list must come for the adoption and approval by the members. Once that is done, then we can send it to the next process that the chairperson is speaking to.
Okay. Do I get somebody who's saying this must be done by raising a hand and saying so?
No, we agree, Chair. It's okay. We agree with the process, and hopefully the process that after the changes are effected, then it will come back to the portfolio committee for approval. But just to check, how long does this process take? Just to check that, Chair.
Yeah, I'm awaiting an answer.
Thank you, Chairperson. For us to prepare the draft A list, as we indicated, we've already started. It always depends on the complexities and our discussion to find one another, the state law advisor, the parliamentary advisor, and the departmental advisors. So in many instances, practically 2 to 3 days suffice. I just want to add, Chairperson, that in light of us going forward, I was dealing with other bills and I became aware that the CREDA contract has been terminated last year, December. So there are delays that are also within the system in respect of supply chain management to get the supplier that can produce the B versions and the adopted A list. So what I'm saying that the delay may not necessarily be from us as the supporting staff that must prepare the draft A list, but taking the process forward as well, there might be some challenges, and I would advise that the committee staff should start on that process. They are aware that there are definitely going to be changes proposed by the committee. I think they must engage administratively on that process so as to try and cap further delays. But 2 to 3 days for us would suffice to finalize the process for the draft A list. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. The maximum of 7 days, I assume, it will not be bad. We really need to... Because the commitment that we made in Parliament is that there were about 100 and something bills that were on the pipeline. There were those that they said, those of us who believe we'll finish before we rise must raise their hand. We raised our hand, and we need to finalize before we rise. So please, department and the legal people, work within the constraints of the time. Take your 7 days if you can, bring back the item within the 14 days time of your working. It's enough. Only one, I had the mover that was honorable say, okay, I haven't had anyone seconding. Thank you.
Just a clarity, Chair. Konje, the regulations will be done after the act, or the regulations will be formulated as we continue with this, I would call it consultation. Can I just get that clarity? Thank you.
I don't get why you're asking that question, Peggy.
I'm asking this question based on what you said. I must not talk to the issue of Section 197.
No, can I get a second of the motion move? So while we range, I'll now go to the next step and you can speak anything. Thank you. Mamnin.
Matthew, a chair, a second.
Thank you very much. I see the hand of Mamnin. I'm sure she does the same. Mamnin.
I was second, Chair. I said it. I'm thirding.
Yeah.
I'm thirding.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there anyone who wants to answer what Honorable Teke was asking? I'm not sure which regulation she was referring to. But anyone from the department who has got the aspiration to clear the issue of what, how does the regulations work? I don't want to look big here.
The person, there is clause 48, which speaks to the regulations and enabling that delegation to the minister. I think normally on the process, Chairperson, the regulations also follow the same drafting difference that in the scope of the executive and no longer within the scope of the legislatures. But what normally happens, is that they would prepare, sometimes they are upfront, and when they bring the legislation draft, somewhere, somehow, they've already started with the regulations that the bill would already be speaking to, but other departments start the process once the enactment is in place. And in case the legislature, and in this instance would be Parliament or the National Assembly, wants to play a role and see the regulations before they are effected and gazetted and become actual regulations, in terms of Section 1014, the legislation that Parliament passes may indicate if they want any role to play in respect of regulations that will relate to the bill that they have passed or the legislation that falls within their portfolio. But currently, Clause 48 does not go as far as indicating whether the regulations this committee wants them to be tabled or not. It's an open-ended thing that the department, if they so wish for record purposes, they will just table and bring to Parliament, but not for consideration or approval and engagement on. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We have done well. We finished very much before time. It was a tedious process. It needed our commitment and our dedication to the work. I must thank every one of us who gave him or herself time to sit through this work. It's not a small job. Formulation of a bill is a very tedious job. I want to thank your respect and your attitude towards each other on building this work. Having said so, let's meet in the next meeting. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Recording stopped.